voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dr. Brown. Are you all packed up?
We are, yeah. Just getting some last-minute touches in. Thanks for asking, Melissa. How are you?
I mean, I'm doing fine. I'm still waiting for my invitation, but it's totally cool. I know that the mail's been delayed. It's fine. I'm sure my invitation will come by the time you're back from the Galapagos, but it's
We might need
cool.
a translator, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, whenever the invitation comes, I'm ready to go. So you just let me know. Yeah. In the meantime, let the turtles know I said hi. So
we'll do.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. No, I'm glad to have you here. You know, I was reading something yesterday that made me think of you, Dr. Brown. You and I talked about this a little bit with the pandemic. It was interesting how many other diseases or infections seem to kind of be on the decline significantly because there was such a focus on COVID. And I was reading something yesterday about how disruptions related to the pandemic led to steep declines in cases of, is it dengue?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, what is it dengue or dengue fever, or what is it commonly known as?
It can be called dengue. That is sort of the official clinical name is dengue. Dengue fever is sort of it's sort of what it does.
Okay.
But it is a virus transmitted by mosquitoes.
Okay.
It is not common in the U.S.
It's not.
It is not. It is actually seen outside of the U.S., usually in more tropical areas.
Okay. Interesting. So very much like other things that we saw, for example, before the pandemic was starting, we had a measles outbreak. We were very concerned about the flu.
Right.
You know, this when I was reading this article, it made me wonder, now that COVID is winding down and we're reaching more of like an endemic stage, I'm wondering if we're going to see these very drastic inclines of these kinds of cases. So in other countries, as you mentioned, you know, you've got something like dengue. But here in the U.S., are we going to start to see these just mass amounts of flu cases or, you know, God forbid, you know, seeing like a measles outbreak? Even it was sad to see, like in Ukraine, you've got polio outbreaks
right
now. You know what I'm saying? So it made my mind kind of wander a little bit.
That is actually, it's a good thought, by the way. Nice utilization of the term endemic. I appreciate that.
Welcome. I learned a lot from you.
What I would say is that, you know, things like dengue, chikungunya, these are ones that are viral, mosquito-borne. The likelihood that we're going to see an uptick will just be based on sort of what we saw before. We won't see anything necessary. We shouldn't expect to see anything new. We would see small outbreaks if that potentially occurs, but it's not something that we would say, okay, now that we've been isolated for 2 years, there's, you know, now we're going to end up getting huge outbreaks of dengue. However, the run-of-the-mill viruses, the gastroenteritis, the coughs and colds and flus, can come back a little bit with a vengeance. And that is a little bit of a concern that we have in sort of my specialty, is that we might start seeing more. They've been sort of hiding. We have almost 2 years. So every year we develop some immunity to them. That's why children usually get sicker than adults, or actually get a lot, I shouldn't say sicker, I should say end up getting a lot more illness than adults do, because adults have immunity that they've acquired for years. Children don't have that immunity, so they end up having those coughs and colds. So they seem to have more, they actually do have more coughs and colds than adults do. But if you sort of stop that cycle, what could potentially happen is that there could be a sort of an increase of coughs, colds, gastroenteritis, and even the flu. So I'm actually watching very carefully about the flu, and you know, as we continue to talk, you know, and through the summer into the fall, we'll talk very aggressively about the flu and getting the flu shot, because my concern is that we've had 2 years now of, you know, minimal to no flu. It's coming. It's just a matter of time.
Let's talk about shots, because there's already the rumblings again, and you and I have talked about this so many times, but every time it comes up, I have to bring it back up. There are the rumblings, fourth COVID shot, you know, because the booster's only good for 6 months. And I have to be honest, Dr. Brown, I have a two-part question for you. So the first part is, I've got a lot of pushback, people who are like, I'm done. I'm done. I got my vaccines. I've followed all the rules, and COVID is, you know, is always going to be here. Essentially, it's always going to live on. So I don't want to get boosted anymore. I mean, that's not me saying it. I'm just saying there are a lot of people who have said that to me. So what would be your response to people who are just sick of the booster
right.
shots?
Right. You know, right now, given the current situation, what we're seeing across the country, again, we are seeing a couple of little endemics and a couple of little upticks here and there, but nothing sort of globally like we saw with Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, and again, this is my opinion, we haven't had any official, but at this point, you know, boosters, unless you fit into a special category, I think at this point is not needed. I mean, that could change, but right now I think we are actually good. The comment that I would say to that listener or the person who made that comment is that, you know, when the fall comes, we will likely see an uptick. And instead of thinking this as a booster, we're going to think this as a, you know, it will be a booster. Because if we do a booster this coming year, the likelihood that we will have one the following year isn't that great. It's not as great as the flu. So we'd have to play that by ear. But my expectation is that by the end of the summer, by fall, we've seen some major upticks every year now in, you know, November, late November, December, and January. So I imagine that we're probably going to be talking about this again, about a fourth booster.
So maybe we stop calling it a booster. And the reason I say that is because it's interesting. You have people who will get the flu shot every year. No questions asked. They'll get the flu shot. They're like, oh, it's flu season. Got to get the flu shot. Maybe we stop calling it a booster. And I'm not saying
right.
that to you. But I'm saying maybe we stop marketing it as that, because I think people are, you know, and of course, there are some people who are just sick of anything COVID. I mean, you say the word COVID and they, you know. But I think there are plenty of people who, if they just know, okay, so I got to get my flu shot. I got to get my COVID shot and
right.
whatever. I think we need to rework that, because it's amazing how marketing strategies can change anyone's perspective. But I think when we keep saying the booster, if anything, I think it's bringing down the credibility of the shot. I think it's making people feel like, well, is it really that effective if I got to keep getting boosted? Versus
right.
what I'm hearing from you, Dr. Brown, if I'm correct, is kind of like a flu shot every year. When you're in the season, you get the flu shot, essentially, and a lot of people do that. So
correct.
would you agree that we should almost like get away from that term, maybe in the medical field?
I do, and you kind of heard my hesitation even using it as a term, because
I know.
It really is.
You're like, well,
you know, it's
it is
really
a concern.
Tricky because ultimately a flu shot. A flu shot does have variability, so I guess you can call it a flu shot,
right?
This may have some variability, so we could probably call it the COVID shot. You know, you need to get the COVID shot. And I would say at least I'm imagining that at least coming this, you know, coming the end of 2022, that you're going to see another COVID shot. We'll call it a COVID shot.
We'll call it the COVID
that's
shot.
Coming. And there's going to be more options for those shots, hopefully by then. So there won't be just at least people will have the option to choose either a mRNA from Pfizer or Moderna, or maybe a protein base from Novavax, and there might even be another one that's coming out by then.
Mm.
There might even be a combo, so you can get the flu COVID, the COVID flu.
Yeah, right. Now we're just getting crazy, but actually it could be very much the future, very, very near future. We are chatting with Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health here on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. Dr. Brown, a question from one of our listeners. There was a strong recommendation that people with comorbidities, be extra careful with COVID. Now the CDC saying 90% of people don't need to wear a mask anymore. So if you are vaccinated and boosted, but you do have a comorbidity, what do you suggest people do?
Yeah, so I would. So in those cases, and comorbidities, you know, can be very broad. If you have a history of difficulty with your heart, where you actually have difficulty breathing, or if you have something called COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, where you have difficulty with your lungs, I would recommend you be extra cautious. And that means when you are, and listen, you're going to be careful about, you know, small, I'll say small crowds, so family gatherings, you know, you'll be careful in those aspects. You need to be careful if you're in larger crowds, and those would be when I would wear masks. So if you feel like you're closer, you feel like you're crowded, I would make sure you have a mask and you put a mask on.
Okay. Are you getting reports of wild reactions from the booster shot? I know we were just talking about kind of getting away from the term booster, but I've had a lot of inquiries from people who had no impacts really from the first or the second Pfizer or Moderna, but then they got the booster and they had outbreaks with their skin. They had, I would just say, not only reactions, but they had longer term reactions, like one person in particular who had a full-blown, almost like hives, outbreak for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I had, you know, and then she had sent me, you know, videos and articles of other people who had very similar reactions. Now, I believe she had eczema. So that could be what also triggered it.
Correct.
But right. I wasn't sure if you have heard about the booster triggering more severe reactions than the original two.
So, as you know, as the other two do occur, I've actually heard that sort of response in the first and second also.
Oh, you have?
I'm not surprised. Okay. In the third. Yeah. So it does have. Listen, this is a foreign protein that we're exposing our body to. That's what a vaccine is. You know, we are actually producing a foreign protein, and then we're developing an immune response to it. So our immune systems, which are completely different, everybody has a different immune system, our immune systems react, you know, will react to that. The majority of the people will have sort of minor reactions, pain in the site, and then some people will have, you know, potential fevers, body aches, and like a day of maybe feeling like they have COVID. That would be the most common. And then there's the other people who have what we would say uncommon or rare occurrences. And this would be considered one of those uncommon. It can happen, but it's very unusual. But it could happen for any other sort of vaccine or anything else that's given. So again, I'm sorry that it occurs. You know, taking medications that helps with the symptoms are great. But again, it also means that at least your immune system's working.
Mm-hmm. Do weather conditions impact it as well? Because I have heard rumors that if you get the booster, for example, and then you go out skiing or you're out in an extreme cold, you're out walking and it's you know, it is winter, that can trigger a reaction. Is that true or is that false?
That would be false. There's really no data that would demonstrate that having sort of an extreme temperature change, unless there's a modification in your immune system. And listen, there's always could be a modification in the immune system. That's what it's like to be human. So, I mean, any additional stress, any additional change in aggressive diet or exercise. I mean, there could be some modifications, but ultimately, I would not make a general statement that going out in the extreme cold or extreme cold exercise would make a difference.
Okay. And I have one more question for you, Dr. Brown.
Absolutely.
Or one more I can get to, I should say. This is a question about, I think, the antibody tests. How are we currently testing for antibodies, and how are we sure that it is reliable?
Sure. All right. This is a long answer, but I'll keep it short.
No worries.
So for the test, this is relatively complex. Because, as I said, our immune system is very complex. What we look for is we look for neutralizing antibodies. Now, when you get an antibody test, there's a whole bunch of different things that you can look at, but what we're looking for is neutralizing antibodies. Neutralizing antibodies are the antibodies that are floating around in your bloodstream that will basically attack the virus when it comes in, and we can find specifically what those are. And then there's different variants of those, but the ones that we detect, those neutralizing antibodies, if those are high, that means that if the virus is around, then it's going to attack it quickly, and the likelihood that you're going to get infected is actually lower. So that's actually really good. The likelihood that you're going to, if you do get infected, the likelihood that you're going to get severe symptoms is extremely low. So that's also a really good thing. The test is actually really good, but we don't know necessarily what it means. So even though it's elevated, we know that, and that says that there's some protection. If it's low, we don't know how much protection you actually have.
And for how long.
We do know that you have more if it's high and you know, less if it's lower.
And we also don't know how long your antibodies last too, right? We still don't know that.
Interesting enough, now the antibodies will last. I mean, essentially the antibodies are going to last a very long time. The question is that the mechanism of action in which the COVID-19 works, is it going to the right part of the immune system so it can trigger the immune system to fight it off? And that's sort of the issue. So right now what we're finding is, and the reason why we're even doing boosters, is that we found that the body sort of can respond, but doesn't respond in so much of in a robust way. So it doesn't respond with this all forces forward attack, that's how it can kind of get in and get you really sick. And that's why we recommend the booster. So as I said, relatively complex. So the answer to the question is that, you know, it is good, but you sort of need an expert to review it. And then even with that, it's, you know, it depends on how helpful it is. It's very helpful for people who are immunocompromised. So if people are immunocompromised and their antibodies are low, that means they need to get a fourth shot.
Gotcha. Dr. Brown, I hope you have the best trip. You so deserve
it. Thank you, Melissa.
My listeners have been inundating me with emails and messages to personally tell you and your wife to have an amazing trip and to thank you for everything. And we will see you when you get back. Please do not think about anything here. Just enjoy yourself.
And enjoy your trip. Also, you have a trip towards the end of mine, correct?
I do. Yes, I'm running a 5K to raise money for autism. Yes.
Fantastic.
Going down there to do that. So,
be careful.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Have a great trip. I'll talk to you in April.
Very, very well.
All right. Dr. Brown here on WICC.